Hey, what's going on, everybody? And welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Vlad Sedler. Jason Anthony is out tonight, and instead I have the most amazing special guest joining us. He is a legend in the Major League Baseball industry. He's a VP chair of the Arizona chapter of the Baseball Writers Association of America, an MLB Hall of Fame voter, one of the most well-recognized, most well-connected insiders in Major League Baseball. And of course, he's a journalist and columnist for the USA Today. Y'all know him well at Beat Nightingale on X Twitter and on Blue Sky. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Nightingale. What's up, Bob?
Yeah, doing great. Thanks, Bob.
Yes. All right. So we got a lot of stuff to get to today. This is the height of the free agent season. Obviously, I don't even know if it's the height, right? I mean, there's a lot of the fun stuff to come, but as far as parts of the baseball year, where does this sort of period of time rank for you as far as excitement is concerned?
Yeah, this is kind of the slow time. You'll start to get busy right around winter meetings, 1 week beforehand, winter meetings, and then the 2-3 weeks afterwards. So right now it's still a slow time in the period.
Gotcha. Real quick, just a little get to know you for the people. I think, you know, most people obviously follow you on the social media sites, but talk a little bit about your sort of growing up in baseball. You know, you're playing at a young age, like what teams you follow. Did you collect sports cards, that type of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I always lived in Air Force bases, so never lived in a major league city where there was a team. So I followed the Yankees because my grandparents lived in New Jersey, right outside New York City. So I went to Yankee games. And so I was a Yankee fan, but more of a baseball fan. But yeah, never lived in one major league city. So I was always, couldn't wait for the box scores on Sunday, the big batting averages, everything else. So, but yeah, never lived in one city where there was actually a major league team.
Do you have a team sort of now that you prefer watching, or, you know, your home state team, or just, you know, teams that excite you the most?
Yeah, it's more rooting for individuals. You know, when I was in Minneapolis, it was fun to, root for guys like LaTroy Hawkins and Torrey Hunter and Jack Jones. And no matter where I was, it was like, once you get to know guys, it was much more fun to root for those guys individually than a team-wise. Same thing now, where you kind of pull for guys, but not for teams, but pull for them individually.
And you have obviously a very storied career. Wrote many moons ago, not too many moons, of course, don't want to age you, the Arizona Republic, the Kansas City Star, the LA Times, obviously USA Today for a long time. And I think a lot of people are sort of familiar and follow you for breaking news and insider info, and you have a lot of great relationships and information. But I just wanted to highlight the period of time during when we were about to have a lockout in 2022, and obviously it was a really dark time for everyone in baseball, and let you know how it was on the fantasy side. I mean, as silly as it may sound, like to think of not being able to play play fantasy baseball, not get together with our friends every March. You know, we do these NFBC drafts, 200 plus people, just was rough. It was depressing for so many of us. And I'm sure kind of the same with you, but you were kind of like a guiding light, a shining light during that period of time. And I remember it well because, when you kind of guided us through that day on Twitter and, kind of brought baseball back, right? Fantasy baseball for all of us. So what was that like, kind of being in the middle of everything there in the final days?
Yeah, crazy times. I was in Florida, in Jupiter, Florida. They were at the, both sides were at the St. Louis Cardinals and Marlins complex, and on the ground floor. You watch them going back and forth and talking negotiations, everything else. And I remember saying, okay, looks like there's the end is near. They're going to give up on the international draft. That's a big thing. So a lot of movement. And I remember that night, and I thought the thing was going to end that night. Major League Baseball actually bought the camera crew and stuff like that. That was going to happen. It didn't happen that night. Happened a week later. But I think that was a big thing. Like, okay, once the international draft was over, like, okay, we're going to get this thing done.
That's fantastic. And obviously it's, I mean, now it feels like, you know, so long ago, and in the COVID period, all of that just seems so long ago. I wanted to ask you, this is, you know, a little bit more sort of personal, but just as far as if you can give the listeners and, you know, fantasy community a little bit of like a glimpse of the business of the insiders, and like, you know, are there sort of, you know, what are the sort of the dynamics as far as, you know, people or sort of organizations that you might trust more or less, that, you know, they have certain reputations, or does that sort of shift over time depending on, you know, management and things like that? And do those, like, the, you know, how consistent are those type of things? And you, of course, you know, just kind of double up on that. You seem like, from everything I know about you, you know, it's very like friendly, easygoing type. And I know not everyone in the industry and your colleagues are sort of the same way. And so are people more willing to share info with somebody with, like, you know, kind of your type of personality?
Yeah, more easygoing. And, there's guys that will report everything they hear. I'll usually sit on things and, you know, wait for things to happen. Whether it's a, for instance, you know, when the Cubs are trying to trade, you know, a guy like Cody Bellinger, I've known that for a couple of weeks, you know, then it gets out that they're trying to trade him. But just kind of wait and sit on things. Mm-hmm. Just a trust factor. A lot of these things that get leaked out are from the agents. The agents probably leak out 99% of the news. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come out from the clubs. It comes out from the agents. And you kind of know where, you know, people are coming from and what their agenda is.
What's your feel on the Roky Sasaki news with the agent today having a quote about, there is no tampering. He's just kind of there. Nothing is predetermined. We all know that he's most likely going to sign all the way, not until January 15th or so. But what's kind of the scoop there, and how do you think things turn out? Where will Sasaki land?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a rumor for over a year that Sasaki is signing with the Dodgers, that there's already been agreement. Obviously, you know, it's illegal to have agreement. So MLB has denied it. Dodgers denied it. His agent, Joel Wolf, has denied it. But everybody seems to believe that, okay, he's going to the Dodgers. We'll see what happens. I think, you know, they would, certainly the agent in MLB, hoping that he signed somewhere else. Otherwise, it's going to say, oh, so I told you he's going to sign with the Dodgers. So if it's not the Dodgers, I would think the Padres, just because of a Yu Darvish's relationship with the Japanese players. So we'll see.
And then just the fact that he has never maxed out or never pitched beyond 130 innings, obviously has been dominant for so many years. But if you were to sort of ballpark for the fantasy people, because let me tell you right now, I'm sure you're not looking at like ADP lists and stuff, but he's going high up there, like basically among the top 15 pitchers in baseball. He's been going ahead of even Yamamoto and Snell and some of those guys in some drafts. Are fantasy guys crazy to be going so high for somebody that, you know, isn't very likely going to pitch more than 150 innings?
I mean, yeah, you kind of look at Yamamoto. I mean, the fact that he pitched, you know, so few innings, it's like, okay, how many innings is this guy going to go? He hasn't pitched that many innings in Japan. So I think you got to be a little careful. So he's probably going to be very limited no matter where he goes. A very young, talented pitcher, more talented than Yamamoto, more talented than Darvish, Otani, everybody else. But he doesn't have the experience. So it's going to take a little bit.
I was just kind of riding on that, along the same lines. I wanted to get your thoughts on pitcher injuries. As you know, massive uptick as far as IL days for a lot of these pitchers, going for a record number of Tommy John surgeries, so many pushing for max velocity. I mean, you see the list of guys that are throwing 99, 100 miles per hour. A lot of these guys are going down. It's really scary. Have you heard anything from teams or Major League Baseball itself about like processes or ways that they may prevent these type of injuries? Or is this something that just teams are just accepting and maybe we'll see a less focus on the max velocity?
Well, teams are accepting it. And Major League Baseball is trying to get down to, they're already with 13-man pitching staff. They like to go to 12-man pitching staff. Just put emphasis on starting pitching. because it's been bad as far as, you know, it much emphasis there's been on, you know, all the injuries. It's almost like the a lot of teams would say, okay, well, shoot them up there, spin them out, we'll grab somebody else. Everybody's looking for velocity right now. And that's been a big problem in Major League Baseball, where now you need pitchers that know how to pitch. Guys like Zach Gallen knows how to pitch. He doesn't try to throw 100 miles an hour. So, yeah, baseball's trying to revert to that and kind of, you know, get to those grassroots, like guys like Greg Maddux and stuff. Like, if you don't know how to pitch, that's what we want. You know, we don't want guys to throw as hard as they can because they're going to blow in a couple of years.
A guy like Tomoyuki Sugano, who's been dominant in Japan for many, many years. He's been linked to the Mariners, you know, the Giants. Obviously, those would be great pitcher parks for him. But I've been kind of scooping him up in a bunch of drafts, like way ahead of his market price. Just seems like somebody to me who I think would translate well. I think we last saw him in, what was it, the WPC in 2017 when he was mowing down Team USA, I think in the quarterfinal or semifinal game. But how do you think he would kind of come along as far as you know, being a fantasy value, being somebody that's a solid pitcher here in the States?
Yeah, you never know. I mean, all the Japanese pitchers have done well. I mean, who thought that Shota would pitch as well as he did with the Cubs? But yeah, I mean, but guys who throw very hard, you say, okay, how long is it going to last? When does he blow out? But yeah, the Japanese pitchers have pitched very well, and Shota's a great example. I mean, all the money and attention is thrown to Yamamoto. Shota was better than anybody.
Going to do just a super quick housekeeping, just letting people know, FTN Fantasy Baseball subscribers. My rankings are out, the BDP rankings. So if you are drafting, now is the time to get in on it. Be sure to keep an eye out. If you are a subscriber, be sure to keep out on an email that'll be coming for me. From me, because our early bird special, it only goes till about December 10th. Our full draft guide is going to come out on December 17th. Lots of great strategy content. Projections will be out in January, so we'll be getting ready for that. I'm here with the legendary Bob Nightingale. Really appreciate you joining us today. Let's get into some of the fun stuff. Juan Soto, he's, you know, met with five teams already. Obviously with his agent, the Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, Red Sox, and Jays. The Phillies are expected to talk to him soon. What is sort of your understanding or whatever you can speak of with the Soto situation, whatever you can share with us on where you think he may land and what might be a good fit for him?
Well, I think he's going to land with the Mets or the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, the Mets have all the money. You know, they could use a big name. So look at the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays had $700 million they spent on Ohtani. So $700 million burning a hole in their pocket they could spend there. I think the Yankees are better off, you know, going without them. Dodgers have no interest. I think the Dodgers are just kind of playing games or placating Scott Boras. I don't see him going anywhere else. Yeah, very good player. But, you know, when you're a team like the Dodgers, you say, wait a minute now. Why would the San Diego Padres so much better in 2024 without Soto than they were 2023 with Soto? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But I think it's the Mets or the Blue Jays.
And then kind of the fallout from that. I mean, and this is obviously, of course, a different position, but Pete Alonso, what feels like the best landing spot for him?
I go with a team like Seattle Mariners, who really need a first baseman. I don't see him going with the Mets. I really don't. If the Mets had wanted to sign him, they would have done already. Mm-hmm. You know, they spent a lot of money elsewhere. I think Stearns wants to do things his own way. So if I had a bet, I'd say the Mets or the Yankees get Christian Walker from the San Diego, from the Arizona Diamondbacks, who's probably a better all-round player. Doesn't have the power of Alonso, but a better all-round player.
Yeah, and you know, there's a really interesting pocket in draft board. So it's around pick 100 and there are a bunch of good corner infielders there. So it's guys like Christian Walker, you got, you know, Vinny Pascantino's around there, Junior Caminero, you know, coming up, Tristan Casas, who I think, you know, we were kind of robbed of a great season with him. Do you know him? He's really kind of come up on the scene as a really, really super quirky guy. What do you think of Tristan Casas this season?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, a very good player for the Red Sox, and, you know, proved he can play in the AL East. So I would think a lot of teams would want to have him. If you can play the AL East, you can play anywhere. So no, he certainly has some value.
If you knew that, if we just knew that the Yankees were going to sign Christian Walker, would you rather recommend people draft Casas or Walker for 2025?
I would go Walker. You know, yeah. I love Walker. Three-time Gold Glove winner, 300 hitter. He's going to hit 30 home runs. He's going to drive in 100 ribbies. Just a very consistent guy. I mean, Casas is very good, but Walker is very, very consistent. I think Walker is very underrated. I think people love him as a first baseman.
Yeah, yeah, he's really solid. And then as far as just like timing, how long when, you know, when the dominoes start sort of falling, I mean, are things just going to get started earlier? Are we going to avoid the type of situations that we had last year with Blake Snell and obviously Jordan Montgomery just kind of, you know, having a rough year, kind of joining everyone late? Do you, and I mean, there are just so many starting free agent pitchers available. Like, you know, are they all going to be signed by a certain time before training camp, spring training?
I would think before training camp because of what happened last year. I think teams are saying, you know what, it didn't work. And agents are going to say, let's not try to slide these guys in spring training because it doesn't work. We've seen that. So I think it'll be a little bit, you know, earlier than we saw last year. I'm not saying, you know, early. You know, it's already been a slow free agent market, just like it's been for years. But I don't see people lasting until spring training like we did a year ago.
Let me put you a little bit on the spot here, if you don't mind. Are there anything right now cooking that you are, you know, able to or comfortable letting us know, or sort of directions just for fantasy players who are drafting players that they don't know what team they're going to land on? Like, you know, sort of, you know, things that are happening, things that you could break right here for us.
Well, I think the Yankees are, you know, making moves like, okay, if we don't get Soto, what do we want to do? Do we want Christian Walker at first base, which makes sense? Do we want Willy Adames at third base? Excuse me. Do we want Alex Bregman at third base? You know, in a guy like, you know, with the Cubs, you know, do we want Bellinger in the outfield? Mm-hmm. Bellinger would be great center fielder. Excuse me. Put Bellinger at center field, and then slide Judge back over to right field.
Mm-hmm. Got it. But as far as like a right now, there's nothing like super eminent or just anything that is, you know, guys that are gonna be moving that you could share.
No, probably at least a week away. Excuse me. At least during the Thanksgiving week. It's a slow week.
Yep.
Thanksgiving week is over. Then we'll see a little pickup.
Alex Bregman, obviously, you know, he's only 30 years old, right? And had the bone spur removed from his right elbow last year. You know, dealing with a little bit of injury issues the last couple of years. From what I have read, that the Astros have every intention to try to have him return. Obviously, you've got the Tigers in the mix, the Red Sox. He's even willing to move to second base from report. So. What do you think of Alex Bregman? Where does he ultimately end up? And also, what would you think would be the best spot for him, just as far as, you know, value is concerned?
I mean, the best spot would be Houston. I just don't know if Houston's going to spend over $200 million. At one point, he won over $300 million. He's not going to get that. I would think he ends up with the Yankees or Mets. Perfect spot. Maybe the Phillies, if they can drain Boehm. But he can help out east. A lot of guys can't. He can. So I'll go the Yankees or Mets for Bregman.
By the way, there's a guy that I've been just into for a while. I mean, StatCast darling, and had a really down year. In fact, a lot of the Rays did. But Yandy Diaz, you know, just never getting that launch angle going. But, you know, near the top of average exit velocity, barrel rate. I mean, everything you name it, the guy just crushes it. And obviously he was, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, I think he was essentially playing hurt, whether that's been, you know, out there or not, I'm not sure, but I hear that the Rays are going to be trading guys like him and Brandon Lau. What do you think of Yandy Diaz? Do you think there's any sort of upside in his, sort of production, just as far as like homers, RBI, runs?
You know, there is, you know, definitely for both those guys. But if you're a team and you're saying, okay, why the Rays train this guy? The Rays are a very smart team. Why are they moving him? You got to be a little gun shy. It's like, okay, what do they know that we don't know? And you say about every team is trying to train a guy like they know him better than anybody else. So if I'm a team trying to train for Diaz, it's like, hold off now. Let's, you know, pump the brakes. What do they know that we don't know? So I would be surprised if both those guys end up with the Rays just because, you know, teams are being gunshot.
What about the, obviously, the stadium they're not going to be playing in, and they'll be in the, you know, the minor league Yankee Stadium. What's your feel for, I guess, who would be better values in this park, in the home park, as far as the hitters versus the pitchers? Because obviously their staff is pretty great. You got Jeffrey Springs back from Tommy John last year, Ryan Pepio, second full season with them after the trade from the Dodgers, basically a year and a half of being pretty good. Shane Boz it seems to be fully back. And then you got the hitters, obviously, from what I see, good for the lefty power bats, Josh Lowe, Brandon Lau. But where do you see more of the value there as far as hitters or pitchers for the Tampa guys?
Well, I think certainly for the left-handed hitters, because it's going to be the same dimensions as regular Yankee Stadium. So you get that short right perch. So, you know, whenever the left-handed hitters are going to have a big advantage because it's the same exact dimensions as Yankee Stadium. So I would think that, you know, the offense will definitely go up for those guys.
And then as far as the A's bats going to play in Sacramento now, obviously Lawrence Butler had a big, massive breakout season. I remember, you know, quite a few times guys hitting multiple bombs leading off, and then Brent Rooker. So these are two guys that are, I mean, they're now going top 100 in fantasy drafts. I mean, they're basically getting drafted for what they did last year. Do you anticipate any sort of, I guess, pullback from that? Or do you just, is this kind of like, you know, just they're going to continue doing well like they did last year offensively?
Yeah, they may do better because that's the launching pad in Sacramento. All the scouts that are up there say, okay, wait for those numbers to just explode because that ball flies in thin air and everything else. So I think the A's hang on to those guys. I'd be shocked if they trade them because they said they're not going to trade them. So, no, I would think the numbers would just go up for those guys.
Yep, that makes sense. What about some of these older guys? I want to just kind of throw out a few names here. These are guys. I mean, the only oldest of these guys is Paul Goldschmidt. So he's 37. The rest of these guys are pretty much early 30s. But these are players that didn't do, you know, all that well last season, or they were hurt, or just you know, different things going on with them. But all are free agents. I'm wondering if you think any of them might have their careers revived, or are guys that people should target in fantasy. So it's guys like Paul Goldschmidt. You got Gleyber Torres is 28, Jorge Polanco, Tim Anderson, who, you know, obviously was pretty awful last season, Michael Conforto, and then Max Kepler, somebody I was really into last year. He just could not stay healthy. But between Goldie, Torres, Polanco, Anderson, Conforto, and Kepler, does anyone there stand out? And is there any, you know, offensive environment they could thrive in still?
I would think Paul Goldschmidt. I mean, teams love Paul Goldschmidt. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him back with Milwaukee. Milwaukee loves the guy. I know they have a first baseman, obviously, in Rhys Hoskins, but maybe you can, you know, push him at first base, primarily DH, and kind of bounce back and forth between the two of them. But I would think Goldschmidt. I mean, the Brewers love Goldschmidt, so I think he would stay in the division. I think he's going to have a few landing spots to go. Tim Anderson, I'm not sure if he plays again. Yeah, he just hasn't been good for a few years now. So I think those days might be numbered. But I think Goldschmidt has a lot of teams intrigued.
And I know he's a few years older, but if you had to pick one between Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado for the 2025 season, where would you lean?
Probably Arenado, just because of defense and everything else. I think he's got more left in the tank. I think it's less of a risk with Arenado. I still think he's a stud. You know, they're trying to trade him. We'll see where he goes. But I think the safer bet for sure is Arenado.
So I got a few more here. I wanted to ask you about a guy who's a personal favorite of mine, somebody that paid dividends for me back in 2021. He had a massive season with the Cardinals. That's Tyler O'Neill. And I just had a soft spot for him for so very long. But I've always had like guys and my friends in St. Louis saying like, man, you don't know. There's just stuff that people don't talk about. He's not this, you know, happy-go-lucky guy. And, you know, I guess the team has had some problems with him, but what's the deal with Tyler O'Neill? Is there any chance he can land in his home, you know, country of Canada and play for the Blue Jays and maybe flourish there? And then also any concern about the fact that he's kind of been struggling against righties this season, just crushes the lefties, but struggling against the righties, struggling to stay healthy. What's your feel on Tyler O'Neill and what's the true backstory with him?
No, I think he's a good get for somebody. I think he'd be great going back home in Toronto, Blue Jays. But yeah, your friends are right. He was an underachieving guy in St. Louis. You kept waiting for it to turn on. It really didn't. It's almost like feast or famine with him. So St. Louis kind of gave up on him. And, you know, he played well in spurts for the Red Sox, but he was never that, you know, all-around great player that the Cardinals imagined. So I think he's a steady guy. I don't think he's an all-around stud that people want. But a good power hitter that's going to go through his ups and downs.
Padre or former first overall pick Jerkson Profar. Many years later, he finally has that massive season. He was a common denominator on a lot of big winning fantasy teams last year because he was basically undrafted and ended up as a top 20 hitter. And so, you know, curious about your thoughts on his landing spot and can he repeat the offensive numbers he put up, or is that dependent on sort of where he lands?
Yeah, unbelievable season. I mean, easily could be the comeback player of the year. I hope he ends up back in San Diego. You know, Texas loved him. Yeah, people don't know what to believe. You know, you're going to get what you got last year or what you had beforehand. But you probably have a incentive-laden contract for what he does, because he had so many great numbers and reward the guy for it. So hopefully he ends up in San Diego. But yeah, marvelous. Had a marvelous season. It's hard to predict what he's going to do because he was never this player until last year.
Can I ask you about his teammate or former teammate, Jackson Merrill, obviously that incredible season that he had. Let me tell you, he is going right now around 30th overall in draft. So he's going in a range with Ketel Marte and Rafael Devers and Matt Olson, like just a lot of high expectations for him. Does he continue that success, or will there be kind of a little bit of an offensive pullback from that amazing rookie year?
I think it'll keep getting better. I mean, the fact this kid has never played center field or outfield before in his life and thrusting that thing, I would have voted him for Rookie of the Year. As much as I love Paul Skenes, I mean, this guy was there from the get-go, opening day till the end, got his team to playoffs. So Padres don't make the playoffs without him. I think I voted him sixth or seventh in my MVP ballot. So, no, I think he'll just get better for that team.
Who's the Tyler Holton voter, by the way? Did you see that in the AL? Somebody got a 10th place Tyler Holton vote.
I didn't look to see who that was.
Let me ask you about Walker Buehler. This is just, I guess maybe self-proclaimed, but like 15, 20 years ago, I came up with the moniker for myself, Roto Gut, and always kind of had fantasy success with, I mean, the stats and numbers of course is the basis of it, but I just have a lot of sort of good instinct on things. And I don't know. I just have this feeling that Walker Buehler might end up in Atlanta. Am I onto something here? Or am I just kind of blowing myself full of smoke?
No, it could be. I mean, he'll be even got like the end will love. I think any team will love him. Hard-nosed guy, pitching the World Series, didn't have a good regular season. Showed that, okay, I'm going to start, and I'm going to be, relieved in the next couple of days. I thought what he did in the postseason was going to be enough for the Dodgers to give him a qualifying offer. A little surprised they didn't. Mm-hmm. But, no, I think a lot of people say, you know what, we're going to get the best out of him. He's gone through the rehab and everything else. So, yeah, I mean, I could see Atlanta. I could see a number of teams, but certainly Atlanta would be interesting.
Quick question on some of these relievers, because you know, fantasy people, they want to know. I mean, and there's so much uncertainty, so much volatility with all these closers, and it's hard to be, you know, like I'm a nut. I'm drafting here in November, drafting guys without jobs yet. But you have some of the bigger name free agents as far as the closers or relievers are concerned. Tanner Scott, obviously, incredibly dominant year last year. You got Kenley towards the end of his career. Kirby Yates, you know, coming back at 37 was just incredible. Jeff Hoffman talking about teams looking at him possibly being a starter. And then Carlos Estevez. Which of those guys do you seem like are going to be signed to be the actual closers? Like who's sort of, you know, situation will they mess up?
I meant through Estevez for sure.
Yeah.
You know, Kirby Yates, I think either eighth or ninth inning guy. You know, Jansen is always close. So Jansen's going to be a closer. I think with Scott, for what he does, you're going to sign him to be a closer as well. So I think most of those guys are going to be, you know, closers' roles. Yeah, be interested with Jansen when he ends up with the Dodgers. He's got to end up with a, you know, with a team that's going to, you know, compete for the playoffs. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Jansen back with the Dodgers.
And then what about like Clay Holmes, right? I mean, he was a top closer last year and just kind of faltered a little bit. Luke Weaver was just absolutely phenomenal last year. Are the Yankees just going to stick with Weaver as their guy, or they're most likely going to go after after somebody spent some money for another big reliever, probably, right?
I would think they want a reliever. I don't know if you can count on Luke Weaver. He bounced around and maybe could have had the guy. He's only making $2 million. So I'm not sure Jansen's a guy in the Yankees, but I would think Jansen's going to be a closer wherever he goes. But, yeah, I like Holmes a lot. You know, and closers bounce back and forth. I don't think Holmes is a middle reliever at all. I could easily see him closing for somebody else. He's got too good of stuff.
Last reliever I'll talk to you about is a dominant one for the Dodgers last year, kind of reinvigorated his career. He was incredible for that. He was the best closer in baseball about 5 years ago for the A's. And talking about Blake Treinen, is he someone else that a team would look for to be their closer, or just like a setup man?
No, I think he'd be closer for sure. Yeah, certainly the eighth inning or ninth inning, you know, what he did. He was dominant for the Dodgers. So why wouldn't you go for a veteran guy that knows how to do it? So I would think he'd be signs. He's going to sign somewhere as a closer.
All right. I got two more questions for you, and then we'll wrap up with a little bit of a Hall of Fame talk. But just some pitchers, if you were to, you know, kind of where you think some of these guys would land among the top starting pitchers, with like Corbin Burns, Blake Snell, Max Fried, Kikuchi, Nick Pivetta, Flaherty, and Nathan Eovaldi. Do you have any anything you can share with us about where is the most likely landing spot for any of those guys?
I would think Snell would end up back in the with the Giants. I think he's better off West Coast. I think teams out east are wary about him. I'm like, okay, can he handle Philly? Can he handle Boston, New York? You know, that's where he didn't get those offers originally. I think those concerns are still out there about him. You know, Flaherty could end up anywhere. He's sort of a Baltimore, but I can see him, you know, he pitched well enough to do what he did. I think Burns is going to get the biggest money no matter where he goes. I would think, you know, Boston, Baltimore, the Dodgers would be the best. I would think he'd want to stay out west because he's got a home in Arizona. I think he would like to stay out in the Cactus League for spring training. But, yeah, I think it's wide open. Kikuchi's really established himself. I mean, everybody's kind of made fun of that trade. He pitched, you know, lights out. So, you know, he proved he can pitch anywhere.
And then as far as some of the older guys, and a lot of these guys aren't even being drafted in the first 30 rounds of fantasy. And it is really kind of, I mean, that's the life cycle, right? But it's just really sad to see guys like Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer kind of no longer, you know, on the map in the twilight of their careers. But between this list of names, if I could ask you for like somebody that you would think one or two guys most likely to bounce back or at least have a better season than last year or stay healthy, between Verlander, Scherzer, Lance Lynn, Matt Boyd, 41-year-old Charlie Morton, 37-year-old Alex Cobb, and then Mike Clevenger. Between those guys, anyone stand out to you?
I mean, I like what Lynn does, you know, as far as being a veteran guy. 10, 11 wins, give you a close to 200 innings. I love what he does at a very cheap price. Obviously, Scherzer and Verlander are the big names. Verlander wants, you know, the 300 wins. I think of all those guys, Verlander's probably the surest best bet. Scherzer has pitched very well, but he's been really racked up with injuries. He might be the second best bet. Yeah, we'll see about the other guys. But, yeah, I'm not sure. I think Clevenger is probably, of all those guys at the end of the totem pole, he's probably the guy that you get the cheapest and you're not sure about.
So we got Hall of Fame voting ballots. They are due back on the end of the year, the 31st of December. They'll all be announced on the 21st of January. Tell us about, I mean, that whole process. That must be fun. But as far as this year's pool, you've got, you know, Billy Wagner is kind of his final one. He was five votes shy last year. So, you know, between him, Ichiro, do you think this will be unanimous? And sort of who else, Andrew Jones, who else might be getting in this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ichiro is a slam dunk. If he's not unanimous, he should get, you know, 99.9% of the votes. So he's in for sure. I think CeCe's a slam dunk. I know a lot of people disagree that that should be gets in the first ballot because of high ERA. But I think he gets in, you know, the 251 wins, the fact he pitched on short rest during the with the Brewers when he's a free agent shows how gutsy he is. I think he's in. I think Wagner's in, being five votes short last year in the ballot. I think that's it. I think we're going to have three Hall of Famers in. We'll see what the Veterans Committee, but I don't see Andrew Jones getting in yet. Yeah, I vote for him. I think he's still going to be short. I think Beltran's going to be short. Biscayle's going to be short. But yeah, I think three guys get in. So Ichiro, CeCe, and Billy Wagner.
All right, my very final question to you, and I do apologize, and I sent you some notes of some stuff that we might talk about today, but this one is kind of off the cuff. So, you know, many years ago, 2018, I kind of had my, roto, fame from a call I made in the preseason with Christian Yelich. So this is when he was coming over to Milwaukee, and for whatever reason, man, I was just really feeling it. Like, this is going to be the massive breakout season, and so, you know, I tweeted out, Christian Yelich is going to be, you know, top a first round fantasy value and be a NL MVP candidate. So it came to fruition. Since then, I have an annual column where I write about, you know, who that guy might be. And some years have been better than others. I think, you know, I was off one year, Corey Seager. This year, my guy was Jazz Chisholm, and that ended up working out well. But the true sort of this year's Yelich of this past year was Jaren Durant. I mean, he's the guy that was kind of a little bit off the map and just had that sort of first round, like, amazing fantasy season. So I guess I wanted to ask you if I could get your thoughts on any, you know, strong feel on breakout players, like hitters or even pitchers, just somebody who you think might be undervalued in fantasy drafts or by the fantasy community, who you have a feel on who might have a big year and that people should be drafting.
Yeah, tough question. I think Christian Walker is very underrated. So if he goes to the Yankees or Mets, I think he's got a chance to be a top five, top six MVP candidate. Three-time Gold Glove winner. I think he's a better all-around player than Pete Alonso. Doesn't hit the home runs. But I think he's a great, you know, fantasy guy. Willie Adames, I think him going to a big market team, whether it's the Dodgers or the Yankees or Mets, I think he's going to take off. So I like those two guys probably the most as far as, you know, taking off, you know, once you're in the big market.
And then one guy I've been drafting late is Reed Detmers for the Angels. And I know maybe he needs like a change of scenery, but obviously, you know, for former first round pick, his stuff is nasty, but is that what he needs to get going? Do you think Reed Detmers has a future, could be a big addition this season? Good season?
That could be. I mean, I can still see him, you know, doing that stuff, whether it's, you know, with the Angels or anybody else. But nice, solid player. You know, not an MVP caliber, you know, at any means. But, yeah, a solid guy. You go to a place like Colorado or something else, you never know. You can put up big time numbers. It's tough. When you play with a poor team like the Angels, it's tough to be motivated, to have big time numbers every day.
Bob, I really, really, really appreciate it. Coming on here for with us today and talking to everybody in the fantasy community, and I'm glad I had a chance to speak with you before things start to get really crazy. But just want to ask for some, sort of final words or anything that you wanted to mention or talk about.
Yeah, no, best of luck, Vlad, and it's fun with the fantasy. A lot of times that people don't realize. Just the makeup of guys, what they can handle the big cities. I think some of the big markets stay away from some guys like, wait a minute now, I don't think he can play for us. He can play for a small market or medium market. And I think that kind of get lost in the fantasy baseball community. It's like these guys are human beings. You got to know guys. It's like like a Blake Snell. Say someone signs him back east, can he really perform? He took half a year to perform for the Giants. So a lot of times these guys take a while to adjust, particularly when there's pressure on them.
Bob, thank you so much. Everyone, I'm sure you do follow him, but if you do not, it's at B Nightingale, NIGHTENGALE. Thank you so much, Bob. For Bob Nightingale, our very special guest, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you.